From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, this Monday edition, a whole brand new week. And boy, we've got a lot lined up for you. I'm Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council, honored to be filling in on this Monday for Tony, who is in Israel. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that later. And speaking of Israel, look, this week I invite you to join our Stand With Israel prayer campaign. Stand With Israel. We have a prayer campaign. In fact, it's taking place while Tony is in Israel, as we're trying to support Israel, and we're calling for America to repent for failing to continue to stand with Israel. And so we're encouraging you to sign on with this prayer pledge for this week. And by doing so, you'll receive some videos straight from Tony from Israel this week as he's going around, among other things, he's praying. And we're going to ask you to pray along with him. And for any gift of any size that you send, we want to send you a free Israel-American Friendship lapel pin. So how do you join us on this prayer campaign? You can do so easily, simply by texting the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, now coming up on today's program, President Biden seems to be anxious to ratchet up a feud, literally, between him and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
He's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world. It's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake. So I want to see a ceasefire.
Wow. Well, of course, that was President Biden. It was a sit-down interview with MSNBC's Jonathan Capehart. It aired on Saturday. And is this an effort to play to his base on the left? Who knows? What could this mean for Israel's ongoing war with Hamas? Well, here in just a few moments, I'll be talking about that with Texas Congressman Keith Self, who is a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And the battle over TikTok continues to escalate.
The reason why TikTok is so successful, the reason why it's so attractive, is because it knows you better than you know yourself. And the more you use it, the more it learns. The problem is not TikTok or the videos. The problem is the algorithm that powers it is controlled by a company in China that must do whatever the Chinese Communist Party tells them to do.
Well, that was U.S. Senator Marco Rubio earlier today giving his opening remarks during an Intel committee hearing on worldwide threats. Congress could be voting as early as this week on a bill that could lead to the ban of TikTok, which, of course, is a wildly popular social media platform here in the United States. This legislation comes in response to the national security threat that is presented by TikTok's parent company and its affiliation with the Chinese Communist Party. I'll be talking about that with China expert Gordon Chang a little bit later in the program. And right before this past weekend, in fact, Friday evening, Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin signed a bill to codify the redefinition of marriage in his state. Why in the world would any Republican governor drift to the left on this issue? I have no idea. But I guess a more important question is, will this legislation ultimately punish those in Virginia who embrace a biblical worldview on marriage? Well, we'll talk about that with Virginia Cobb. She's the president of the Family Foundation in Virginia, and we'll be discussing that a little bit later in the program as well. And as I mentioned, Family Research Council's president, Tony Perkins, is in Israel this week. Amazing doors have opened for him. In fact, earlier today, he met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and Tony will be joining me from Jerusalem to discuss that meeting and more. So you don't want to miss out on that discussion. Got a lot coming your way today, and the website, of course, is tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources available there for you, including notes on today's program, as well as archives of previous programs. So be sure to check it out and keep it handy, tonyperkins.com. All right. The ongoing feud between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Biden has intensified in recent days as the president announced plans to build a port on Israel's shore to provide supplies to Gaza. He also discussed what he called a red line in how Israel conducts its war against Hamas. Wow. Is the Biden administration abandoning Israel? Is he doing this for political reasons to shore up flagging poll numbers with the left here at home? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Keith Self. He serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee and the Veteran Affairs Committee. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Self, always great to have you back on the program. Welcome.
Great to see you, Jody. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always great to have you. You bring tremendous insight and input. We appreciate it. So you serve on the Foreign Affairs Committee. Give me your reaction to the president's recent comments criticizing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
The president's being schizophrenic over this. He says he supports Israel, and yet we have competing red lines. His red line is he wants a ceasefire. Netanyahu's red line is October 7th will never happen again, which means he must destroy Hamas infrastructure. So we have competing red lines here between two sovereign states. And I will tell you, I think that President Biden is simply bending the knee to the leftmost part of his party.
Wow, that is extremely well said, having two red lines. And look, I don't know that Israel has much option in this. I mean, Hamas has proven what they want to do to Israel. And so the red line that they have to annihilate Hamas is something I don't see how they can compromise on this. And it's amazing the position that President Biden is taking. So in the president's position here that he's taking, he, of course, now is planning to construct some sort of temporary port to bring supplies to Gaza. What are you hearing about that? And is this not, Congressman, U.S. boots on the ground? That's what it looks like to me.
There is no way there would not be U.S. boots on the ground. It's actually a pier, a floating pier out in the ocean that the large ships would then transfer aid to and would be put on smaller ships for transport in, the way I understand it. First of all, Netanyahu says that fighting could be over in 2 months. And once the ship, our ship that left port yesterday, it will take it, what, a week to get there? And then it's 60 to 90 days to construct the pier. And then they have to start doing the operations. The fighting could be over before this pier is even constructed. So this is simply virtue signaling that we are going to do something, even if it makes no sense.
Wow. That's pretty stunning to hear it like that. You know, if this war could be ended 2 months, that's tremendous. But that also gives a clue, potentially, of how close Netanyahu believes they are in accomplishing their mission. But as you mentioned, we now have this ship that has left Virginia. It's on the way. And as we've both acknowledged, supposedly at least, it's supposed to be used for aid for humanitarian purposes. But it seems to me that this type of activity should require congressional authorization. Am I missing something here? Does the president have the authority to do this without Congress behind it?
Well, President Biden doesn't seem to worry about congressional authority for anything. Take the southern border. He ignores the laws on the southern border. He doesn't care about the law there. He seems to take the law into his own hands in many ways. So why would he obey the law now? Why would he ask for congressional approval? What I would like to see is Congress starting to act on our authorities to claw back our Article I authority, which is our authority to declare war or to do things like this. So I would like to at least ask the question of the president, what authority are you doing this under? I don't understand, and I would love to have that conversation with him.
Well, you're not the only one who doesn't understand. I mean, this seems like an act, like we were just discussing, of boots on the ground, U.S. boots on the ground. I really don't see how you look at this any other way. And that seems clearly to require congressional authorization. And we were talking a few moments ago, perhaps not everyone really understands the red line that President Biden is making, but his red line involves Israel invading Rafah, which, quite frankly, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu appears totally intent on ignoring President Biden's red line in that regard. What do you know on that side of things?
I think Netanyahu's been very clear. They will continue to destroy the infrastructure of Hamas. And look, there's over 500 miles of tunnels in Gaza. And the last part that they need to clean out is the southern part of Gaza to include Rafah. So listen, Hamas could release the hostages, end this today, surrender, and end it today and stop the suffering that we hear so much about. But Hamas will not do that. So Israel is exercising its right of self-defense to destroy the infrastructure of Hamas, which has said, we will do October 7th again and again. And you have to take them at their word that they will continue to attack Israel as often as they can. They've got a tremendous tunnel structure. They take all of the humanitarian aid and turn it into military supplies anyway. So we've got to, one, look at their record and take them at their word that they will continue to attack Israel. And that is all the reason Netanyahu needs to continue the job, to finish the job.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point, too, that all of this could be over if Hamas were to release the hostages. And, I mean, this could end quickly, but all the pressure is placed on Israel. And that is just is really quite revealing. Does it appear to you that the president really is doing nothing other than political gamemanship, playing to the left, playing to his base as it relates to Israel?
Exactly. That is exactly what he's doing. This is an election ploy. We saw it in the State of the Union address. We see it in his trying to claw back some sort of authority on the southern border. Now we see it in Israel. This is nothing but electioneering. This is buying votes amongst the left. That's all it is.
Well, I tell you, speaking of the State of the Union address, that was all that was. I've been through many State of the Union addresses. Never have I witnessed one like that, ever. It was nothing. The politics had very little in terms of the state of our union and uniting our union. Congressman Keith Self, always great seeing you. Appreciate your leadership in so many ways and always grateful to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Jody. Great to be here with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Keep the torch ablaze, my friend. All right, stay tuned. We've got much more coming your way that you don't want to miss. But next, right after the break, we're going to be talking with China expert Gordon Chang. We're going to be discussing the federal response to TikTok, among other things. Wildly, wildly popular platform, digital platform being used, seems like, by everyone. But it's owned by China. And what are they doing by sneaking into our lives? We'll go there right after the break, so stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch. Great to have you on this Monday. All right, last week, the House Energy and Commerce Committee unanimously advanced a piece of legislation that could either require the Chinese parent company of TikTok to divest its ownership of the social media giant or ban its use altogether here in the United States. And Congress could be voting on that legislation as soon as this week. So this all, by the way, is coming as the threat that's posed by China continues to intensify. In fact, the Communist Party of China recently confirmed that it is going to be increasing its military this year by 7.2% in 1 year. Wow. Earlier today, the heads of various U.S. intelligence agencies testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the growing threat from China and other nations. And joining me now with his thoughts on all of this is Gordon Chang. He's the distinguished fellow at the Gatestone Institute. He's the author of The Coming Collapse of China and China is Going to War. And by the way, you can follow Gordon on X under the handle at Gordon G. Chang, and I encourage you to do so. Gordon, always great to have you on Washington Watch. Thank you for coming back.
Well, thank you so much, Jody.
Well, listen, you are such an expert on China. How in the world, Gordon, did we get to this place that we are now? And I'm sure some people are asking, what is the national security threat that TikTok poses?
Well, TikTok poses two primary threats. One of them is it steals data from 170 million devices in the United States. And the second is that Beijing uses it to propagate its narratives. And some of those narratives, it's not just Russian disinformation about the Ukraine war or what Beijing thinks on a particular topic, but things like promotion of illegal drug use, self-harm, you know, all of these social issues that China wants to actually destroy a generation of American youth. And the question is, how did we get here? Well, it's because, at least since Eisenhower, we have not had an American president who has declared the Communist Party of China to be America's enemy. Matter of fact, President Biden won't even call them an adversary. He just says they're a competitor. Well, they're not competing with us within the existing international system, Jody. They're trying to take that system down and replace it with worldwide Chinese rule.
Unbelievable that our leaders cannot recognize that or refuse to recognize it, probably is a, a better way to describe all of this. So now we come to this legislation dealing with TikTok, and of course we have some lawmakers that's saying that it's not a ban, but it would provide TikTok's parent company either 6 months to divest its ownership or potentially then a ban. How do you think all this is going to play out?
I hope that the Biden administration will force a change in ownership after that legislation passes. There are a lot of actually powerful forces in both parties that are rooting for TikTok. And this is a problem. You know, the American people need to understand that we have a disease in our political system. And it's not just Marxist Democrats. It's also conservative Republicans who have, for very different reasons, support Communist Party narratives. And so we've got to make sure that people start to understand that national security issues must predominate, because we have an enemy that is trying to destroy our society. And we cannot allow ideologies or even this notion of free trade to prevent us from defending ourselves.
And you call it right. We have a political enemy here who is trying to take us down. And, you know, what more wise, clever way of doing so than with an innocent app like TikTok that just seems so fun and enjoyable, and yet it is being used so maliciously. And all of this, Gordon, I wanted to ask you about this, because all of this is coming at a time that we are hearing right now that China's military spending is increasing 7.2% this year. They're going up to over $230 billion for 2024. And that is happening, as you well know, as its own GDP growth is not meeting the targets, the goals that they were hoping that their own GDP. So their GDP is weak, and yet they are spending more militarily. What do we make of this?
Yeah, this is a very important point, Jody, that a lot of people have been ignoring. And that is, you know, we don't know exactly how fast China's military spending is. We know what they tell us. It's probably not what they tell us. But it's evident, and it's been evident for quite some time, that the Chinese military is spending the increases in the Chinese military budget are much higher than increases in gross domestic product, which means that China, I think, eventually is going to run out of money, because it's not just the military, it's Belt and Road, it's internal security, it's all of their other projects that they have. And that means, I think, that Xi Jinping must be seeing a closing window of opportunity, that he realizes that if he doesn't move soon, he will not be able to move at all, which means that he could take us by surprise.
Well, yeah, and nobody understands their economy as much as you do, that I'm aware of. So does this, though, increase in military spending in the midst of all this, like we're talking about, does this show that really Xi Jinping's desire ultimately is to replace current international order with communism? Is that what he's trying to do?
Absolutely. He actually has been talking about this notion of Tian Xia, or all under heaven, where Chinese emperors believe that they not only had the mandate of heaven to rule what they called Tian Xia, but also heaven compelled them to do so. And, you know, we ignore what Xi Jinping and his subordinates have been saying, but they've made it quite clear. They do not think that the United States should be considered a sovereign state. And by the way, the extermination of the American people, not just killing a few of us, but the extermination of the American people is a permitted topic in China's tightly controlled public square. So, you know, we Americans have been put on notice. We didn't listen to Osama bin Laden in the 1990s. We didn't even listen to him after he killed six Americans in 1993 at the North Tower of the World Trade Center. Well, we're not listening to the Chinese right now.
Well, we better start listening up. There's a huge threat out there, a huge monster in the room, if you will, and we better start paying attention to it. Thank you, Gordon Chang. Always great to have you on the program. Thanks for your input.
Well, thank you, Jody. I really appreciate it.
You bet. All right, friends, coming up next, why is Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin tracking to the left? We'll put it that way. What does the legislation he signed codifying the redefinition of marriage in Virginia, what does this potentially mean for Christians there? A big question. We'll be discussing that right after the break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony while he is in Israel. We'll be actually talking with him here a little bit later in the program. But for now, you may have seen this past Friday evening, Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin signed a Democrat-sponsored bill to allow for same-sex marriage in Virginia. Now, probably some of you, at least, are wondering why such a bill like this ever even reached the governor's desk, given the fact that the Supreme Court's Obergefell decision back in 2015 legalized same-sex marriage nationally. Well, it's a good question, but some people are saying this legislation that Youngkin signed on Friday is just largely a symbolic measure in case the Supreme Court ever reverses that Obergefell decision. But a bigger question in all of this is, what effects could this have on Christians? What effect could this have on others in Virginia who don't subscribe to the redefinition of marriage? And, you know, even further, what could this possibly reveal about Governor Youngkin and other Republican candidates if they have some additional national ambitions politically? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Victoria Cobb. She's the president of the Family Foundation of Virginia. Victoria, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, great to have you. So let's just get kind of an overview of this bill. Explain a little more detail what this bill does and how it could potentially affect the people of faith there in Virginia.
Yeah, you were very much on point, which is that same-sex marriage is functionally happening in Virginia, not by the will of the people, but by a court decision. We actually have a constitutional amendment that had secured traditional marriage prior to Obergefell. But this is really a bill that was their effort to codify same-sex marriage, to get it into our code so that it is written down somewhere, to your point, in case Obergefell ever was reversed. We've seen this, obviously, in the abortion debate after Roe, so we know that does happen. And so it was a definition put into the code, and then it had a sort of a fig leaf of a religious liberty component to it, saying that if you're a clerk, so this is in the section of the code about what clerks can do and related to their jobs in the marriage space specifically. And so it has a little bit of a religious, if you're a religious group or you're a religious clerk, you know, a religious person presiding over marriage, you don't have to do something against your will. So that's what it is. And it does a number of things that concern us. Primarily, it simply gives fodder to the LGBT movement that thinks they continue to gain ground in Virginia on these things. And we do have functional concerns that if you're, for example, a legislator and you preside over weddings, what's not written in the religious freedom component of this bill is people like that. They aren't necessarily doing something religious in nature. They aren't necessarily religious groups providing a marriage. So we're a little concerned about, does this exclude some people?
Yeah, I'm extremely concerned about this as well, Victoria, along with millions of other people. Look, our Constitution is not to be fragmented. It does not apply to this group of people and does not apply to another group of people. Religious liberties are for all Americans, whether they be pastors or whether they be a florist or a baker or whatever else. We all have the right to stand to our religious beliefs, to present those beliefs in public, and to be protected of holding to those beliefs without fear of government retribution or persecution. So what kind of punishment, as you share your concerns with this, what kind of punishment could we see potentially for Christians in Virginia for embracing a biblical worldview of marriage?
Well, this is just the concern. We continue to be concerned about religious freedom sort of statements that are written by the other side that leave people out. And also, we'd like to believe there are still people who might not even be people of faith who know what marriage is. You know, it was a definition, a very specific definition for all of humankind until very, very recently. And so it's also just a matter of conscience for some people. But beyond that, the language in this bill also differentiates between sex and gender. So we haven't even quite gotten to that discussion. And that, I think, has more implication than even codifying same-sex marriage, because everywhere we put into our code that somehow sex and gender are different, we know the fallout of that. We know that means there are boys in girls' sports. We know that means there are boys in girls' bathrooms. We have got to stop pretending, along with the left, that there is some differentiation, that there are all these different genders and that there could be more than two of them and that they are different than somebody's biological sex. That has tremendous implication.
Absolutely. Well, what do you say, and our time, unfortunately, is slipping away from us, but what is your opinion about Governor Youngkin and other Republicans who may have national ambitions? I mean, they clearly wish this issue would go away, but do you get the sense that some Republicans believe that they have to cave on this issue if they're ever going to stand a chance in a general election?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. There are Republican strategists. There are log cabin Republicans that are pushing these elected officials to say, this ship has sailed. Don't be on the correct side of this. Just come along and sign these bills. But I think it's going to matter in primaries. I really do. I think there's still a very large portion of the Republican Party that cares very much what the definition of marriage is, does not want to be on the wrong side of the law, whether it's with pronouns or anything else, simply because they're people of faith. And so I do think the governor is going to have to stand by this in future, if he has future aspirations nationally or otherwise. And I think it's harmful. And the articles are making a big deal about the fact that he's a Christian and he did this, which of course they are. They want this, is their goal. Their entire goal is to say people of faith are coming around and they're going to be okay with this too. That's really part of the underlying effort here.
Yeah, it really is disturbing. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch and for giving your perspective on this. I think the governor has stepped in a mess. If he has political ambitions, this could be extremely harmful for him in the future. All right, friends, stay tuned. After the break, you know Tony is in Israel. He met today with the Prime Minister Netanyahu, and he will be joining me from Jerusalem right after this break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council, and thank you for giving us part of your time today. And listen, don't forget to sign FRC's Stand With Israel prayer pledge. It's taking place this week. Sign up and you'll receive a prayer guide as well as some prayer videos coming straight from Israel. And if you give a gift of any size, we'll send you a free Israeli-American friendship lapel pin. So to join us, to pray with us for Israel, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, and speaking of Israel, as we've been discussing on and off throughout the program, the Biden administration has made some very concerning remarks, really a turn on Israel, as Israel finds itself in a continued war with Hamas. Well, this weekend, the president mentioned a so-called red line, and yet at the same time, we have a warship that remains en route to the Middle East, where the president is hoping to install a temporary floating pier in order to transfer some humanitarian aid. So, what is the situation on the ground in Israel? And what's been the response from Israelis, both from those in power, such as Prime Minister Netanyahu and his war cabinet, as well as Israeli citizens who actually experienced the October 7th terrorist attacks? Well, joining me now from Israel to report on what he's seeing and hearing is our very own Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins. Tony, great to have you. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Well, thank you, Jody, for filling in for me. It was my plan to be hosting today, but a last-minute meeting arranged with the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, so I just left that meeting. So I appreciate you filling in for me and sitting in the seat today. Yes, we're in Israel, been here through the weekend. It is... I've lost track of the number of times I've been here, but this is a different time. Yesterday, we were down on the southern border, right on the Gaza border. went to the kibbutz where some of the first attacks and atrocities took place, walked through the houses, stepped over the charred remains of their homes, the bullet holes, listened to the stories. This is a different time. And this is, to jump ahead to what the prime minister said today as you were talking about praying for Israel, is that he asked for prayers and asked that the evangelical community, Christians, pray for Israel. This is a time that we need to be standing with them, as it appears the whole world, including the Biden administration, backing away from Israel. And so this is, it's hard to really put in perspective the attack and the proximity in which this occurred, right there on the border with Gaza, people living peacefully in these kibbutz, and in the morning hours of October 7th, just began the attack and the atrocities. It's, as I've described before on the program, and I can say with even greater confidence now, demonic. Just pure evil is what took place here on October the 7th.
It really is, Tony, and we are so grateful that you're there. There are many thousands all across the country that are praying for you and praying for Israel. I know when you have meetings such as what you had today with Prime Minister Netanyahu, there's a lot of things you cannot share. But with things that you can share, hopefully you were able to communicate with him the tremendous support from American Christians here. But what was his attitude? What's his mood? And is there anything you can share with us?
I can, Jody. I mean, he's obviously carrying a heavy weight for his people and the burden that he's walking this nation through, the atrocities. I mean, this country is so small that everyone knows someone that's been affected either directly or indirectly by what happened October the 7th, but then the war that has continued. And I met a number of soldiers. I was actually over in Samaria earlier today. Again, very important. I was standing on the Mount of Blessing. In fact, if folks who are going to sign up and pray, I prayed on the Mount of Blessing, and I'll be sending that out probably in the morning. But this is the land that the Biden administration and others are talking about giving up. This so-called two-state solution is actually giving up the heart of the land of the Bible, Samaria, Judea, where 70% of the accounts that we read of in Scripture took place in the Old Testament. So the Prime Minister and his team are resolute that they're going to fight and win this war, and they're going to eliminate Hamas and the threat to their people. Now, there was also an understanding that this land is inseparable. You can't, it's indefensible if you go with this so-called two-state solution, but this land is home. And I'll go back to your question, because I do want to share something that came out of the meeting with the Prime Minister. But I talked to some people there on the border of Gaza in one of these kibbutz, and what really struck me, Jody, more than anything, was people have come here to Israel from all over the world, Jews that have come here because of the persecution that they have faced in all parts of the world. And they came here as a home for the Jewish people, a safe place, a safe harbor. That was shattered on October the 7th. And it was almost like, where do we go now? We have no other place to go. So we have to fight. We have to fight to secure our homeland, for our children and for the future. And when you're talking to people who have seen their neighbors slaughtered or even lost their own family members to what took place on October the 7th, you know that they mean business. And there is no other place for them to go. And they realize that. And so the Prime Minister carries the weight of that with a sense of resolution and determination and even peace. And I did, after we spent quite a bit of time, probably I've met with him a number of times, but this is probably the longest meeting I've had with the Prime Minister. And I asked him as we close up, I said, how can we pray for you? And he's asked that evangelicals, Christians, in America in particular, but all around the world, be praying for Israel and stand with Israel, be vocal about their support for Israel and for the land of Israel. But I did pray for him. I asked him if I could pray for him. And so I did close our time together with prayer. And it was a kind of a humorous moment. After I finished praying, he said, "Thank you." And it was a very, very intentional prayer. But then he said, "You know what? I heard President Biden said I'd have a come to Jesus moment. Maybe this was it." as I prayed for him. And his staff could hardly contain themselves after he made that comment.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, speaking of Biden and Netanyahu, I mean, we all are shocked here with the way that this administration continues to go wobbly at best on Israel. That's got to be deeply concerning for the prime minister as well. Was he able, as far as what you're able to share, express any reaction to that?
Well, he did. His first comment when he walked in the room and sat down across from me, he says, "You're not going wobbly, are you?" And I said, "No, Mr. Prime Minister, we're not going wobbly. We're more determined than ever." And we had a very good conversation with him, and a very heart-to-heart conversation. And I shared with him that as a Bible-believing Christian, our support goes much deeper than any political movement or party. We're committed to standing with Israel because we've been instructed to in Scripture that those who bless Israel will be blessed. And we know that this land was given to Israel, that the deed was given to them by the Creator. And who are we to step in? And Jody, I've been around long enough. I was back, I go back to 2004 when there was the push in the Bush administration, went along with it and even encouraged it to move Jewish settlers out of Gaza and turn Gaza over to the Palestinians. And we see where that's led. And I actually, in a conversation with Ron Dermer, who is with the prime minister, former ambassador to the U.S. from Israel, Ron is a good friend, he said, it didn't work. And it would be even worse if we give them the designation of an independent state. And so we've got history here, Jody, recent history that shows us what a two-state solution would look like here in Israel, and it would make this country indefensible.
Absolutely it would. And anyone who has any understanding of it realizes that. And so that makes you concerned about the direction this administration is going. Was there any discussion or reaction to Biden's, the administration's plan to build a port? It seems like there's at least danger that this is ultimately going to provide aid to Hamas beyond humanitarian aid. Did that subject come up at all?
No, we didn't speak specifically about that. I think the prime minister is very guarded in going too directly against the policies of the Biden administration. Whoever is in power, America is an important ally, and I think we know that Benjamin Netanyahu is not going to be silent, but he's not going to, I think, necessarily invoke conflict with the United States. But it's very clear, Israel is going forward. Israel is going to finish this war. They are going to protect their borders. They care about their borders. They know what happens when their borders are not protected. And so they are not going to let America, they're not going to let the international community stand in the way of doing what needs to be done. They want to do it in concert with the support of the United States, because they truly do see us as their strongest ally. But if we leave them, they're going forward. And so
they're going to complete the job.
I think, Jody, the big takeaway for me, they are going to complete the job. And the takeaway for me is that
go ahead, Tom.
The prime minister knows he respects and understands the evangelical community is very important in the United States, but important to Israel. And he requests that we pray and we stand for Israel.
Wow. And all the more reason, folks, to join up with this prayer pledge right now, more important than ever. Tony, I'd like to get your reaction to this. President Biden is saying that Prime Minister Netanyahu is hurting Israel more than helping. Play clip two, please. And Tony, I'd like to get your thoughts on this.
He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world. It's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake. So I want to see a ceasefire.
Your reactions, Tony.
Well, we discussed that in a roundabout manner. We talked about the way forward and that the cabinet, the Israeli government, is unified. The Knesset voted 99-9 on a resolution saying that we can't go down this path of creating an independent state for the Palestine, that it's just not going to work. And so there's no daylight here. Obviously, not 100%. You're always going to have a few dissenters. But the Israeli public, and just from our conversations that we've had, overwhelming support. Look, this was more than 9/11 to them. It's kind of like they came here, Jody, going back to 1948, as a place of last resort, a place where they could be home, a place that they could be safe. And I know there's been conflict throughout that entire 76 years, but what happened on October the 7th was different. This was totally different. And all of that was shattered. And they are determined they are not going to allow this last place of solace and security and freedom to be taken from them. They're not going to let it go.
And they shouldn't. And I know you had a great meeting with the Prime Minister today, but you've been speaking with others as well, citizens that you've been talking to, rabbis, different individuals. What is kind of the dominant theme that you're hearing from people on the ground?
Jody, it's unity. I was with the mayor, Mayor Yossi, over in the Sumerian region, that council over there, and I've known him for a number of years, and we had a great time today. I went to his house, had a cup of coffee, discussed the situation, and the number of people he's had to go visit who lost family in Gaza, sons that were fighting there, and terrorist attacks that have taken place in this middle region of the country, called the West Bank, which is part of Israel. So these terrorist acts aren't really being reported much by the news. There's unity here. And they're all saying, look, October the 6th, in fact, one of them told me, said, if someone is like being obstinate or not, moving forward, they say, oh, that's October 6th. Because October 6th, the nation was divided before the attack, very divided. And they all say that. October the 7th, when they were attacked, that brought together a national unity that most that I have talked to, in fact, everyone I've talked to that discussed this, said they've never seen anything like it. They're more unified than they've ever been before. And even those
That's
who
awesome.
Had issues with the prime minister, political issues, they are with him now. And we need to be with
Tony,
him and
thank
praying
you so
that
much.
God would direct them, protect them, and bring peace. Absolutely, Jody.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us from Jerusalem, Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council. And friends, we will continue praying for Israel. We will continue keeping you informed as to what's happening there and elsewhere around the world and our own country. But we close today with an encouragement: pray for Israel. God bless you. Keep the torch ablaze, friends. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.